Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, we've had a little problem here, but anyway, here today we had a connection problem. Here today's interesting birthdays. Alfred Jodl, born 1890, he was the chief of staff of the German general staff during World War II. He was treated as a war criminal at Nuremberg. He was hanged along with Keitel. Hermann Göring was convicted. The foreign minister, Ribbentrop, and Göring committed suicide. One of the other interesting birthdays, Senator, who's known as the, had a very deep, rich voice, Everett McKinley Dirksen from Illinois, was minority leader in the U.S. Senate. Jane Wyman, there's two Reagan connections. Jane Wyman had an Illinois connection to Ronald Reagan. It's also Maureen Reagan's birthday today. She's born in 1941. Here's the CIA's director, William Edgar Colby, who died mysteriously. He took a lot of flack because of what happened in Vietnam and Iran, and he died mysteriously while fishing. Great football coach, Miami Dolphins, Don Shula. One of the best boxers who was a gentleman, Floyd Patterson. Great black opera singer, Grace Bumbry. Had a vice president born on the state, J. Danford Quayle, vice president under the first Bush. Among the deaths today, Caligula was assassinated. Now, Caligula was the Caligula means little boots in vulgar Latin. Excuse me, I still have this cold. And he was the nephew of Tiberius. He was a real he was one of the worst perverts, but was involved in incense, horrible murders, tortures. He's the guy who started the special punishments called, it's not enough to make them die, we have to make them suffer first. And this is what I call, he's probably the origin of the hate crimes. He considered himself a god. He made his horse a consul. That's what really peed off the Praetorian Guard and the horrible things that the horrible tortures that he inflicted on people. It didn't last that long, thank God. A great American woman, saint, a nun, became a convert, started the Sisters of Mercy, I believe. Elizabeth Ann Seton, she started in Baltimore. This guy was considered a robber baron, Cornelius Vanderbilt. He sold liquor to the Indians, and they gave him guns, supposedly. Another great, I wouldn't call Yodel a great general, but Alfred von Schlieffen died in 1917. He's the guy who came up with a plan to which if Germany went to war with France and Britain, his plan was to sweep through Belgium, which they had a treaty of neutrality with, and one of their German diplomats said it's merely a scrap of paper. That really infuriated people. But this thing was called the Schlieffen Plan, and the little buzzways was that the last man on the wing of the right wing of the German army would brush the channel with his sleeve. Count von Moltke's nephew altered the plan. It was a great plan and probably would have worked and would have ended the war in Germany's favor before the United States could enter, because that's what the Germans feared. A great stunt driver, Barney Oldfield, died on this day, and a great Irish ethnic who had a rich voice, Going My Way. I think he played a priest with Bob Hope. And I think I forgot the woman's name. Loretta Young, I think. Barry Fitzgerald. An English guy born in St. Louis who became more English than the English, Thomas Stearns Eliot. I remember his horrible poem, the J. Alfred Prufrock. A guy who was another racer like Barney Oldfield, this guy, Scotsman, Donald Campbell, tried to break the speed record on water. I think he went 300 miles per hour, and his boat blew up. A great jazz musician, Charlie Mingus, was born today. If you remember the World War II film, A Bridge Too Far, I think it was James Fox who played the role of General Brian Horrocks. He died on this day. Another great writer who wrote Berlin Diary, not Berlin Diary, the thing that a book that became Cabaret, that famous movie with Liza Minnelli about the life during the Weimar Republic of homosexuality, lesbianism, drugs, all of that. Christopher Isherwood, another Englishman, a great Mexican conductor, died in a plane crash, Eduardo Mata, a Chilean tenor, Raymond Vinay. He sang a great Othello. And then the husband of Leona Helmsley, Harry Helmsley. I think there was a Jewish family, ethnic Jewish. Her name was Rosenberg, I think, originally. And Helmsley became a Lutheran, I think. And then John Gary, singer, he died on this day. Among the events today, Columbia University, which later became a communist university because of the infiltration of such groups as the Frankfurt Group. We'll get into that another day. These were communist educators who came out of Frankfurt, Germany, emigrated to the United States. They should have been deported, like A. Mitchell Palmer did with the communists during the Wilson administration. In 1885, we had the first successful appendectomy performed by Dr. W.W. Grant. He performed it on a 22-year-old woman, Mary Gartside. It happened in Iowa. In 1887, Thomas Stewart was the first man to bicycle around the world from San Francisco to San Francisco. Maybe that's why we have this bicycle agenda today. In 1893, this would have been interesting during the last presidential campaign with Mitt Romney, the Mormon. President Harrison grants amnesty to the Mormons when he gave them because they gave up polygamy. And 3 years later, Utah became the 45th state admitted to the Union because they abolished or banned polygamy. Another religious milestone next door, in 1915, Moses Alexander became the first elected Jewish governor of Idaho and probably the first elected Jewish heritage governor in the United States. We had two in Illinois. One was Green and I think Samuel Skinner, if I'm not mistaken. It was about the same time that Illinois became the first state to legalize homosexual relations between adults. They decriminalized sexual relations. They didn't say anything about lesbianism, which is interesting. And, of course, this is part of the political fiction that Stonewall, that mafia-owned tavern in New York's Greenwich Village, the Stonewall riot was about underage drinking and prostitution, and the New York Alcoholic Beverage Control Authority busted, or tried to bust that bar because they were selling liquor to minors. Now, liquor, minors can drink in New York at 18 and also in Quebec, which is next door, up in Canada there on the border, and youths from around New York go to cross the border like they do in, from to Wisconsin, where beer can 18-year-olds can drink beer, or could. I don't know what the current is. Anyway, what had happened was that happened in 1960, I think 67. But Illinois in 1963, it's on the statute books, was the first state to decriminalize homosexual relations between consenting adults. In 1923, we had the Negro Baseball League set up because blacks were segregated and barred from playing in professional ball in the leagues. In 1923, Lenin, who was ill, realized the danger that Stalin presented to Russia and the communist movement. He called in his, in a paper that Stalin should be removed, but Lenin died partially because of an assassination attempt. In 1932, Nehru and Gandhi were arrested. They started their freedom movement to free India, get Indian independence. And the viceroy at that time arrested Nehru and Gandhi arrested, and it was the beginning of the movement. In 1939, Hermann Göring, war criminal, appointed another war criminal, but he was assassinated, Heinrich Heydrich, in charge of Jewish immigration, which was a buzz phrase for Jewish extermination. And, of course, Heydrich was assassinated or died because of an assassination attempt in Prague. It's an interesting story. In 1944, Ralph Bunche became the first black U.S. State Department official. And in 1989, Vice President Bush became the first president since Van Buren to declare himself president. What happened was, Reagan had, a colon operation. This is George W. Bush, number one. Now, an interesting thing, among the talking about political animals, Jerry Brown, the governor, now he's the third term governor of California, there was an interregnum. He has, as you can see in this picture, that he has prostate cancer, or you can't see the prostate, but he looks even worse than he did, and I know people who saw him in the hot tub. Excuse me. Anyway, prostate cancer in a male, it's a high incidence. It's usually pretty fatal over a short, or depending on the extent, the severity of the disease. But if he dies in office, he will be the second California governor to die in office. The first was Sonny Jim Rolfe. Now, he was mayor of San Francisco. Now, what Rolfe and Brown have in common is they're both, Brown was born in San Francisco. His father was a controversial district attorney for allegations of bribes, according to George Christopher, who was a later mayor, and other things that went on in the Pat Brown's administration of the San Francisco District Attorney's Office. Sonny Jim Rolfe was he's a vat slob. Excuse me. He used to conduct cockfights in the penthouse. I had a picture somewhere. Excuse me. In the penthouse of the St. Francis Hotel in Union Square. He had cockfights. Anyway, Rolfe was a businessman. He was born of English heritage, and he was born in San Francisco. He later became governor during the Depression and died in office. He was the first California governor. Now, also, there's a new song out by a guy named Morrison's called Journalists Who Lie, and we'll have the lyrics because the song, we got a promo copy, but the it's hard to hear all the lyrics, but the lyrics are very relevant. And this mess of Gannett's editor, Hassan, in New York, I understand, according to Fox News, that they've gotten so many threats and so much anger from the residents in their circulation area, and people have canceled subscriptions to the suburban paper, that Hassan has had to, or she has, she and the newspaper have hired, get this, armed guards. And this is a group, this newspaper editor and her people have been yelling about gun ownership, and here she goes out and gets armed guards supposedly to protect herself. Yet she wanted to publish the names and addresses of people in her circulation area that had licenses for guns, or guns are registered at those addresses. Now, what's interesting, how far does this go? Will the next step be by these moronic journalists to print the names and addresses of people who have had burglar and security alarms installed in their houses and businesses? This information would be available, and you have to get a permit to have this electrical work done. So, you know, where does it stop? And also this whole myth about if you own guns, therefore you're violent. There's more to this situation, especially the violence of the movies, the media. And America has a history of violence. It goes all the way back to colonial times and pre-colonial times. So we need to look at a lot of that. And we are opposed, having worked in the San Francisco Unified School District and given lectures around in the schools in Northern California, we don't believe that teachers should be armed. They have enough trouble maintaining discipline. Also, what happens if a teacher suddenly goes off their rocker and starts shooting up a classroom or a school? What are you going to say then? But there needs to be better security, and there needs the screening of people who come in. For instance, there is no screening of these lesbian and sexual preference groups that come into the schools. Nobody checks them out to see if they've had a sexual predator background, if they have a criminal background, or if they're wanted or whatever, or even if they have qualifications to come into school and talk about a subject which they have no academic qualifications to be talking about, especially to young, impressionable children. Excuse me. So that's an issue. Now, the other night on the TV they had an update on the John Casey case, and this did not come out at the time, although I had some contact with the Hillary Clinton's father, Hugh Rodham. He borrowed my truck to do some hauling from a gay bar that he was an investor in, or he had bought in Chicago's Newtown. This is Clark and Diversey. And one of Rodham's construction workers was a young man whose brother had been a John Casey victim. I think the brother, family was from Arkansas. I'm not positive, but I think that's where he's from. Well, it turns out that John Casey had a sister, and the sister had moved to Arkansas, and she claimed she knew nothing about John Casey's predatory activity, and she gets a call after John Casey had been arrested. She gets a call from John Casey's lawyer that he had been arrested and charged with all of these murders of these 33 young men and 8 that they couldn't identify. Well, one young man, we recently met him doing some other interviews, who lived in Chicago at the time and lived in the same area where John Casey practiced his predatory activity. We're going to play that interview. This kid, Wisely, he was only about 14 at the time, Wisely did not get in to take the ride with Casey. Would have been his last ride. So we're going to play it in a minute. As soon as we still have this problem, and I apologize, excuse me, for these problems that we've been having lately with connections. So we have to resort to another. Here it is. The youth who survives John Casey, the sexual predator. Now, that buzz you hear in the background, I couldn't edit it out.
Robert Zola, and I'm doing another interview on someone who was a, I won't call him a graduate, but he's been through the California prison system. No names, but he had an interesting experience as a young teenager in Chicago. You want to tell us about it?
Sure. I'm originally from Chicago, and back when I was a juvenile, back in 1977, I lived on the north side of Chicago. I happened to be walking down the street in the early evening hours.
How old were you at the time?
About 14 years old.
Okay.
13, 14. I'm walking down the street, and this gentleman pulls up next to me in the car in the early evening hours and rolled down the passenger window, pulled up to the curb, and asked me that I wanted a ride to the house. to where I was walking to, and I declined. And I didn't notice that the doorknob on the passenger side was missing, which was gave me kind of an indicator that you can't get out of the car once you step in.
You were very aware at
right.
that age.
And that being because I'm observant.
Street smart.
Street smart. And then,
So, what type of car was it?
It was an Oldsmobile car. Not
something like that, yeah. Nondescript. It wasn't a Cadillac or a Rolls Royce.
No.
Yeah. So, you think it was John Gacy?
I'm pretty sure it was, because later on, after he was arrested, and they showed his picture, and the news media showed his picture on the news, It kind of looked familiar to me, and it clicked in my head that This looked like this gentleman to try to pick me up.
Yeah. Oh, this guy was no gentleman. Now, you said you had a classmate or a friend who was his last victim or one of his last victims?
I went to school with a kid who, last name is Rafferty, and he happened to be one of his last victims of John Wayne Gacy, who ultimately ended up being murdered and buried underneath his house.
How old was Rafferty?
About my age, I think maybe a year younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Gacy liked a lot of preteen and teen boys and young men up to 19, huh?
Sure.
So, what do you feel relieved now that, he spent a long time in Stateville, the Illinois version of San Quentin, but he's been executed now. Do you ever have any nightmares or any flashbacks about what happened?
Back then I did, back when I was still a juvenile. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, when the story hit the news media, I flashed back, and it made me think about that night that I was walking on the street. What would happen if I would have did get into that car?
Oh,
would
yeah.
I still be here?
You wouldn't be here now. You would have never made it to California.
Right.
Oh, well, you thank your lucky stars. Unfortunately, a lot of other people, a lot of other youth, they went to Elysium Fields, as somebody says. Okay, thank you, Guy. We'll play this, and hopefully that if you were, what practical advice would you give a youngster who's walking on the street or waiting for at the bus stop for a ride late at night or what? When did this happen? What time of day?
This was in about between 6 and 7 p.m.
What season was it in Chicago?
It was summertime.
Summertime, okay, because it could get... So what advice would you give to a youngster to avoid the situation that you almost got caught up in?
Never accept a ride from a stranger, and always be aware of your surroundings and everyone and everybody around you.
You also learn that in prison, too. Be aware of your surroundings.
Right, at all times.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Thank you, Guy. And I hope this is helpful when we put it up. All right. Okay, now we're going to do...
Well, that was the interview I did with a young man, a survivor. Otherwise, he would have been... he would have died and been buried in Gacy's crawl space. We'll end right now. Hopefully we'll get this computer mess straightened out. And we'll end with our theory, our regular theme, politics and poker. And, of course, our agenda for 2013 is accountability. And I think it's time, and a lot of people are telling the same story, and I tell them, stop complaining and start doing something. The other 1% in our economic situation are these bicyclists. You know, these bikes can cost as much as and even over $5,000. And, of course, these bicyclists, I'm not talking about the bicycle messengers. These guys work very hard. We're not talking about them. We are talking about what I consider and what other people realize is the latte leisure class. These are people who have a lot of disposable income because they pay no taxes on that bicycle other than to buy it. They don't pay yearly licensing fees. They don't pay for liability insurance, even though they injure people. There's contact between bicyclists, cars, people, and children. There are no safety devices. They put their wheels on the road. They do not obey the rules of the road. They ignore the rules of the road. They defy the rules of the road. And also, billions of dollars is being spent for these bicycle paths, yet it's the people who, the hardworking people who drive cars, trucks, the truckers, the bus drivers. These people are, in fact, subsidizing a leisure class. And these people are not, the latte leisure class is not accountable overall. They're arrogant, and they think they have special rights, privileges, and exemptions. And it's time to say enough. This is an untapped revenue source, and it's time that people who Americans who pay taxes start speaking up and say, hey, why should we be subsidizing these people when they have all this disposable income and they don't even account, they don't contribute, they consume lattes, expensive dinners, pizza, take vacations, drink fine wines, beers, and some of them have cocaine habits. I know some of these people. So it's time to hold this 1% of the American hold them accountable. We'll end with politics and poker. We'll be back Monday, and I hope my cold is pretty well gone by then.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Mike, wine.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing. Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y? I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say, when you got a pair of tracks, better.
Well, we'll be back Monday. This is Peter Paul Vizzola. Good night. Have a safe weekend. Good night.